Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. That was everything you'd hoped an Open Championship round would be. It was cool. It was damp. There were crosswinds. You had all that and more during a day when the lead sits at 5 under par. Roughly a dozen players broke par in the opening round at Royal Troon, and Rex, some of the game's biggest stars imploded. What to you stood out in this one?
Well, it's the conditions. I think you're right. That's what we come to expect. I'm sure there's people in the United States who woke up this morning and sat down on the couch with a cup of coffee, just with glee, waiting to see how this was going to unravel in the chaos that was today. I think it's interesting when you talk to the players about those conditions, because this is completely different than what they practiced in all week long. The wind completely flipped. It was into going out and sort of down and off the left shoulder, I think would be the way to describe it, coming in, which is just uncomfortable for a lot of players. And we saw a lot of players, especially those who play a fade, sort of struggle coming down the stretch, Tiger Woods being the primary one, simply because once it starts riding the wind, there's no way to stop it. I mean, anybody that's played links golf will tell you that once it gets going in the wrong direction, it's going to go a long way in the wrong direction. But I think you look at the leaderboard, and Scottie Scheffler just finished up his round, and I would say a very, very gritty one under par round. He probably is going to come in and tell you that didn't have his best stuff, but that's exactly what you kind of needed to do today. Even with Shane Lowry at 5 under, he birdied the last hole. He clearly knows how to play this championship and links golf. I think nothing is going to be off the table if you're somewhere around even par right now. Those players, you sort of grinded out what today was.
Yeah, I think Adam Scott said it right when he said this was sort of a day to feel it out, and that he would kind of expect lower scores to prevail over the remaining three rounds. That's not to say this is going to break out into a shootout all of a sudden, but I still think, you know, you're looking at a 12 under par, even though it's sort of a slow start to this championship. You mentioned the completely different wind than what they practice, and that has to be a professional golfer's worst nightmare, doesn't it? Like, they are such perfectionists. They are such creatures of habit. They meticulously go through their practice round preparation. Then all of a sudden, when you get on the range, and luckily Xander Schauffele made the point saying the range was actually exactly positioned how it was going to be over that front nine. So it wasn't like they were totally flying blind, but you're still playing a hole that's roughly 30 to 50 yards different than what you'd practice for over the entire week. You know, you're flying blind in a sense. Then you throw in a 20 mile an hour crosswind that makes, you know, the ball striking and the putting so difficult. I thought it was interesting to see, Rex, how when you talk about Royal Troon, everyone says you get it on the front nine, and then when you come home, you're sort of hanging on for dear life. The back nine was actually easier on Thursday, as easy as it could possibly be, as you mentioned, downwind and helping from the left. It's 300 yards longer and yet 1.5 shots easier. That to me should be ominous for the rest of the field, that this is only going to be more difficult on the back nine. That to me is what really stood out, how drastic of a change you can get. That's the vagaries of links golf. That's the vagaries of the Open Championship as well. I thought it was fun to see, at least for one day, pros kind of put in a mode where they have to be more artistic as opposed to relying on some of the data and sort of notes that they've made over the first couple of days here.
Well, and I think this goes to, and if we're going to start breaking down specific players, probably my biggest surprise is going to be Rory McIlroy, and we can talk about him in a minute. But that goes directly to what happened to Bryson DeChambeau today. This is what I think you and I both alluded to in the preview podcast about the idea that he's playing brilliantly. And when you put him on an American course, when you put him on a Pinehurst, which is a little quirky in its own right, but still, you're taking away Mother Nature to a large degree by comparison to what we have here on a true links course. You're giving him variables that he's not used to and that he simply doesn't like. Those are things he wants to take all the variables out of his life and out of his game. Links golf is nothing but variables. It's trying to figure out the wind is pumping in from the left. Is it going to keep pumping in from the left when I hit this shot, or is it going to die? And that's kind of the difference between having a birdie opportunity and scrambling just to make bogey. And I think those types of things drive a player like that who, to your point, they don't like to be surprised. They want to know exactly what they're going to get. That's the beauty of links golf.
You mentioned Bryson DeChambeau. He was the subject of my story that now appears on NBCSports.com/golf, along with a package deal with Roy McIlroy. Bryson came in with 76. Rory was, I think, the biggest disappointment of the day, turning in a round of 78. You mentioned Bryson first, and it was very interesting because in his post-round comments, he immediately went to blaming the equipment for the struggles that he had in the opening round. I talked to his caddy after the round, he said that, you know, he might tinker with a different golf ball in future Open Championships. Bryson's talked about having potentially less curvature on the face of his driver to cut down on some of that, because when you get to the firmer conditions, the colder conditions, the clubs that he has built for himself are sort of tailor-made for 190 mile an hour ball speed. But when it's this cold, when it's this firm, you're not going to muster that sort of number. And so as a result, he thinks that is why he played poorly on Thursday and is playing poorly, really.
Do you not buy that?
No.
He thinks.
That is not the reason why he has struggled historically and traditionally in the Open Championship, just one top 30 finish and six starts. We talked about, I think, a little bit about it on the preview podcast, but he reminds me a lot of early career Phil Mickelson, who's had resounding success in the States playing one style of play, the aerial attack, be aggressive, make a bunch of birdies and go on that way. And obviously Phil Mickelson was a prolific winner early in his career and did not have a major championship to that point. He particularly struggled, Rex, at the Open Championship, where you have to get the ball on the ground, where you have to play a variety of shots. Like, you would think with Phil Mickelson's prowess and his intelligence that he would have sort of altered his game plan quicker. He never did that, at least not until 2004, back here at Royal Troon, when he finally met with Dave Pelz and developed this sort of chip shot, like a long chip shot with hybrids, long irons, drivers. Bryson has never adapted his game. He's still hitting the same stock shots over and over again. If you watch him in any tournament, whether it's at a major championship, whether it's on LIV Golf, he plays predominantly a hard draw. Bryson caught himself after the round saying, yeah, when that wind was howling into and off the right for the entire front nine, I should have hit more cut shots to basically hold it up against the wind. He didn't. He shoots 42. He shoots himself out of this golf tournament. Something has to happen. It's not just equipment related. I think it's he needs to sort of expand his arsenal of shots if he ever wants to contend in this major championship, because right now he just doesn't have it.
Oh, yeah. And this goes to, I think both of us said essentially the same thing, that Phil Mickelson struggled on Lynx golf for all the reasons you pointed out. He loved the high ball flight. He loved hitting drivers and being aggressive. He didn't really understand or like or have the ability to adopt to that ground game that is so important over here. Again, Shane Lowry is a perfect example of someone who just gets it. And even probably when his game's not there, he figures out a way to get it around this golf course in a decent score. Phil Mickelson didn't understand that until he did. I remember being with his trainer, Phil's trainer, earlier that season before he won at Muirfield, and the trainer telling me just out of the blue that Phil's going to win the Open. And my comment was, the Open Championship you're talking about. You're aware of his record on Lynx Golf. Something, to your point, just snapped. Something switched during that offseason, and he started to understand how to flight the ball a little bit better. He started to understand that, okay, I do have to change my game. And I've had these conversations with players in the past, the idea about, when you come here, do you change your game? Ironically, most players will tell you that they would rather not do that for 1 week out of the year, even a big week like this, because the other 51 weeks, their games are geared towards another specific kind of golf. So why would I do that? We actually were really critical a few years ago of Martin Keimer for switching his, getting to world number one, winning major championships, and switching his swing around so he could play Augusta National well, and that didn't turn out well for him. So I can see where players are coming from, but you're right. I think Bryson is going to have to come to grips with the idea that, okay, get a new ball, get a new driver, like tinker with the equipment, try to find the answer down in the numbers and in the weeds and the spreadsheets. But you're also going to have to make adjustments in how you play the game, how you approach this type of golf, because anyone that's ever been here will tell you that the same game that holds up in the United States, Rory being the primary example, Rory is playing well right now and still could not shoot better than 78. And that shows you that even he struggles when the conditions are like this.
I mean, I totally understand it from Bryson's perspective. I understand the resistance. I understand the stubbornness. If it works 51 weeks a year, why would you sort of change everything just for 1 week a year, which again is probably the flukiest tournament of the year in terms of the draw, in terms of the bounces, in terms of the randomness over and over again. And yet I still go back to Phil Mickelson when he won at Muirfield in 2013, as you referenced. Phil Mickelson called that afterward the most satisfying victory of his career, for the sole reason because he thought that that made him a complete golfer. He had reinvented himself to win that major championship that a lot of people, himself included, early in his career, did not think was possible. Rex, how about Rory's no-show? My pick to win, shoots 78, said he was sort of riddled by indecision off the tee because the winds were so different. As we mentioned at the top of this podcast, he found himself sort of second and guessing himself off the tee because all the additional options that led him to just hitting half of his fairways. That in turn led him to hit just 7 greens in regulation, his worst output of the entire season. This was a player who was finding a groove for the swing over the past couple of months. What happened on Thursday, and can he salvage it?
I think to a certain degree, it's a similar conversation, not to the extremes that we just had about Bryson DeChambeau. And look, to be fair, Rory has won this championship, so it's not impossible for him. And he played well last week at the Scottish Open, which was played on a links-type golf course, but the conditions weren't as severe as today, but you got a taste of it. And he played well. He didn't exactly contend, but he played well enough to give him some confidence coming into this week. However, he would probably be the first one to tell you that when conditions are like this, and I remember him saying a couple of years ago, I believe it was at Royal St. George's, when it blew hard on one day and he shot a million, and his comment was, "Is maybe my game is not suited for this type of golf. Maybe my game is more suited to go to the United States and play on a Parkland course where 330-yard drives that are hit a mile in the air are exactly what you need to succeed." Because again, that's not what you need to succeed over here. Someone asked, I believe it was Bryson, early in the week about wanting to see your ball come off in a certain window. And every pro will tell you, like some guys just hit the ball crazy high, Bryson, Rory being probably the two best examples. When you start having to adjust that and play it under the wind, as Bryson tried to explain, now all of a sudden you're changing not just your swing, you're not just changing how you deliver the club and all of the dynamics of that, which is very, very complicated, but you're also changing the sight line, which is a very mental thing for a player. They want to see the ball come off where they want to see it. It takes a lot to wrap their minds around it. Again, it's no surprise that a player like Padraig Harrington or Shane Lowry has played well in this particular championship because they're used to making those adjustments. When it comes to Rory, I tend to agree with what he said at Royal St. George's, that his game is not suited for the conditions we had out there today.
I don't know. I think this was a bad day to have a bad day. I don't have any sort of screaming, scorching hot take. I don't think this was a lingering hangover from the U.S. Open collapse. I don't think this was, you know, him getting sort of stage fright in the opening round like we'd seen over the past couple of years in major championships. It didn't remind me at all of Port Rush, you know, so desperate to win that championship on his home turf that he goes out and shoots 79. His opening 78 today was his worst round in a major since that Port Rush disaster. To me, this was just not really being on in any facet of his game in very difficult conditions. Rory was playing in the most difficult conditions, teeing off at 10 a.m. and finishing at 3 p.m. That was when the wind was at its strongest. That was when it was sort of spitting rain. That was when the crosswinds were really wreaking havoc on the players. He did not drive the golf ball well enough, as I mentioned, hit just 7 of 14 fairways. Did not putt particularly well either outside the top 100 in every single major statistical category. That is exactly what Rory has not been doing. He has been one of the most consistent through the bag over these past couple of months, the main reason why he has been in contention so often. And yet I think the stench of this is potentially going to linger. Like his Open championship is over. Someone asked him if, like, in 2019, he got off to that bad start. Did he think he was already too far back? He kind of pondered it for 5 seconds, kind of scrunched his face and said, "I'm just worried about making the cut at this point." Historically, yes, it's absolutely over. Each of the last 24 Open Championship winners have been at or within 5 shots of the lead at the opening round. This one is over, and I think it's going to leave a stench on what was an otherwise sort of ascendant trajectory that we've seen from Rory over these past couple of months.
Well, and I picked him to be the biggest disappointment on our punch shots item that was on
victory lapping.
Victory lapping, NBC Sports, and I'm not doing it gleefully either. I think my comment on the preview podcast was, I don't like this. I mean, I'm part of Team Rory when it comes to this. I want to see him win only because it would be such a phenomenal story after what happened at the U.S. Open. I just didn't see it happening. I didn't see him doing this in the first round. I could have 100% seen him get to Sunday and still be relatively close, thinking, you know, just post a good round on Sunday. That was more of what I had in mind. This does surprise me, but again, I would, like you, attribute this more to conditions based on what we saw last week, what we have seen throughout the summer, where what he does best is what really distinguishes him from the rest of the field. And last week he was first in strokes gained off the tee. I believe he was first in strokes gained tee to green. Like, all of those things were still there. He just put himself in a position today where he just made way too many mistakes.
There's going to be plenty of time over the next 3 days to discuss Xander Schauffele, who came in with a 69, Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler also under par after an opening round that keeps them well within the shot of winning this championship. One other player, Rex, that I did want to touch on, who we have not touched on all that much in 2024, is Justin Thomas, who came in early in the day, shot a 3-under 68. If you remember all the way back to last week at the Scottish Open, opened with a 62, then fired rounds of 72, 71, 71, ultimately finished outside the top 60. Are you a believer in JT this week based on what you saw on Thursday and you saw last Thursday at the Renaissance Club?
I'm going to couch this and say I believe he fares better than he did last week after that opening 62, because I can tell you even after that
62,
I can't get much worse. And I'm not going out on too much of a limb there, but I can tell you, I spoke with him after that round last Thursday at the Renaissance Club, and someone pointed out to me that the way I say that is weird. And I 100% agree that's the way they want their name pronounced, Renaissance Club. It's not Renaissance the way the Americans do it, just to be clear on that one. But when I spoke with him after that round, it did not sound like he was very happy about it. He sounded more like he was at ease with the idea that, okay, there was some smoke and mirrors involved in this one. He wasn't taking a victory lap on Thursday. He was a little standoffish, a little aloof on that one. His response today was much different. I think today he was very happy. He said today was a much better round than the way he played a week ago. Again, you're comparing a 68 to a 62. But in these conditions and the way he was able to control his golf ball and the way he putted, he made some clutch putts coming down the stretch, which is always important for JT. And you touched on it right off the open. We simply haven't talked about him that much. And for whatever reason, he has been right there. This is probably a perverse interest of mine. He's been lingering around that top 30 mark in the world ranking. And the reason why I kind of look at that every Monday morning when the world ranking comes out is that's the number that was keeping him in the signature events. So I was always kind of curious, was he going to be able to maintain that? And he has. I believe he's 28th right now in the world. But it's been an ongoing process where I don't think he's played terrible golf. He just hasn't played the type of golf that I think all of us had the expectations of when he won the PGA Championship. And he came out with multiple wins on the PGA Tour, and he was a star on the President's Cup team and the Ryder Cup team. And I think the frustration in him we have seen over the last, I would say, a couple of years, even going back, that he hasn't been performing the way he wants to on the golf course. Today, it was a different tone. It was different body language. So for those reasons, yes, I think this is sustainable.
Yeah, it definitely seems more of a validating round than last week, which was built primarily on him absolutely stuffing it, as well as getting hot at times with the putter. It's amazing to me, Rex, that Justin Thomas, in his Open Championship career, he's now making his eighth career start. He has just one finish better than a T40. If you look at what Justin Thomas does well, he flights his trajectories. He can shape the ball both ways. He, at least in his heyday, was one of the best iron players, if not the best iron player on the planet. And what does he historically struggle with? His putting. That's never been a strong suit for him. This season in particular, it has been a weakness. That is what you want to see from an Open Championship player. Shot making, creativity, great iron play. You can get away with pretty average putting. It boggles my mind that JT has never played well in the Open. He said if he could play one style of golf for the remainder of his career, it would be links golf. The love affair that he has with this style of play, I think, is such a great fit that I want it to work, because I want to see JT at full flight. I want to see JT doing what we know he's capable of doing. I'll continue to ride for him. I think he's a Hall of Fame player, 15-time winner on the PGA Tour. The game is better when he is in full flight. I hope that the Thursday 68 that he shot here at Royal Troon is the start of something better and not sort of a mirage as it was last week. But we'll obviously be tuning in 24 hours from now to see if that is true. You have a Live From Hit to get ready for before you go back, not to Bunkmate, because there's been some criticism of calling her Bunkmate. She is indeed your wife that we are going three wide in the flat with this week. Give me one thing you are most looking forward to seeing Friday at Troon.
Well, I think the forecast calls for better conditions, much better conditions. So I think you're right. The guys are going to be much more aggressive. Well, I should say Adam Scott is right. Guys are going to be much more aggressive. They're going to be much more at ease. I would expect a couple more scores in red figures. I think there was a little bit of a surprise today with the switching win. As we pointed out, guys just weren't ready for what they faced today. That won't be the case tomorrow. But the golf course still has teeth. I mean, we pointed out that even after all the rain today, it's still really firm. We looked at all those players who struggled today. We pointed out Rory, Bryson DeChambeau, Tiger Woods. The rough can be really penal. So I don't expect it to be a pushover. I'm going to stick with my number of 10 under par being a good winning target. But tomorrow will be a day where they can be a little bit more aggressive, I believe.
Here we go with yet another cut watch for Tiger Woods after a 79. That'll certainly be of interest to the really? Early morning viewers.
You think we'll be watching for that on Pins and Needles?
To me, the target for me on Friday's second round is Brooks Koepka, who came in with a 1-under 70, just four shots off the clubhouse lead at this point. It has been a lost year, just as it was for Jon Rahm, a lost year in the major championships. For Brooks, does not have a top 25 finish this season in the major championships. It's four in a row going to last year as well. He's an alpha. He is the winningest player of this generation in the major championships, in the events that matters most. I think he's desperate to try and get a third leg of the Grand Slam as well. Very curious to see how and if he can back it up during what has been a pretty underperforming season in the majors for Brooks Koepka. All right, that is going to do it for this mini pod edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lad. You guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. We'll be back on Friday night for another mini pod. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys Friday night.